Hi, I'm George.
I'm Dan.
I'm Rick.
And we are Queer Magnolias,
the podcast.
Each episode, we're going to talk about what it was like growing up gay in the South.
The trials and the tribulations.
The joy and the struggle.
And more importantly, how we became who we are today.
Oh, honey, queer and fabulous.
So come on in, y'all, and get comfortable, Shug.
Kick off your shoes and sit a spell.
And at the end of each episode, we're going to meet up out on the front porch for my favorite part of the podcast,
Happy Hour.
So join us for an all-you-can-eat buffet of cutting up,
foolishness, and carrying on.
Always served with a heaping helping of sass.
And that's a Queer Magnolias guarantee.
Welcome, everybody, to our tantalizingly tasty podcast. This is Queer Magnolias. In today's episode, we will be talking about food.
Yes!
Well. Before we put our eating pants on, I want to let you know where you can find us. Look for us everywhere you find your podcasts. And if this is your first time joining us, please subscribe so you never miss a cocktail of the week. All right, boys, take it away.
Thank you, Jacob. And for the record, my eating pants was on at 6 a.m. this morning. Let's do this!
She is lying. She has no pants on.
I'm so excited. It's my favorite episode ever. I've kind of done.
She a big girl at heart.
That's right.
At heart.
Well, first off, you know what? I know where you live. I also have a key to your front door.
Oh,
bitch,
shucks.
So. Change the locks, girl. Change the locks. It's first time.
Be walking up in there in the middle of the night and be like,
ice picks.
So I have to ask, what is Southern cooking to y'all?
Swimming in pig fat.
That's exactly right.
No, Jesus. I feel like it's anything. Well, for me, it's anything that my grandma cooks.
And oh, okay.
And is buttermilk, that is lard, that is pork chops fried in 4 inches of oil.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. And to me, exactly what you said. It's usually anything that's breaded or pan fried.
Yep.
It's usually cooked with some kind of grease or oil that is not avocado oil or some shit like that.
It might be a vegetable oil, but we're not sure what the vegetable was.
Wessonality, honey.
But let's be clear, it's not a true dish if it don't come with a mess of greens.
Anything that can be measured in a mess, and if it's really good, it's a nice mess.
That's right.
And just for a little shout out, we're so fortunate that there's so many wonderful chefs in the South now who are making incredible dishes that do not swim in pig fat. There's a lot of great things about pig fat because I'm going to tell you how much I like it. But having said
that, there are healthier options.
There are healthier options. And I am here to tell you that the biggest award winners for the last few years have all been Southern chefs.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Because they are making a difference. They are turning the tables on what people in this country assume is high-class food, child.
It's so true because, you know, people act like the farm-to-table is this new concept for eating.
It's not.
Which is how we ate.
Growing up.
All the time. That's how Southerners eat.
That's it. You might have named a pig, but you still ate it.
But you knew naming it, sooner or later, it was going to be dinner.
Yes, it was. It was going to be called supper.
Amen, sister.
Or breakfast, or lunch, or snack.
Farm to table is exactly what we grew up with. That's exactly the truth. What's your favorite dish growing up?
Fried chicken and white choupette corn.
I was about to say the same thing. Fried chicken. That was, you know, I don't like anything on a bone, but I look back to, you know, when I was growing up, and I've said this many times, I think, throughout this podcast, is one of the things I always go back to is Sunday dinner.
Sunday supper.
Exactly. And one of the main dishes was always fried chicken, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the staple and the go-to.
So when I was little, my great aunt, Chris, I went to Sunday school and church with her sometimes before my family unit went when I was 8 and older. But I would go with Aunt Chris, and every Sunday, she made fried chicken, white corn, and something else. She made it every Sunday, no matter what my mom and dad were doing, and no matter what kind of lunch or dinner I was having with them. Aunt Chris always fried chicken and made white corn because that was my favorite. So I often had dinner with Mom and Daddy and then went to Aunt Chris's to get me some fried chicken. this woman.
And a could, girl.
Yes. That might have been where I got a little bit of my girth or a whole lot of it. But Aunt Chris was old school. Yes. She was, you know, she was my dad's aunt. And she made some magnificent food. And I loved it.
I love me some fried okra.
Really?
But the only way it works is if it's breaded and fried.
Yeah, you cannot stew an okra.
Mm-mm. That shit nasty.
I like the stewed okra.
Do you?
I do. Okay. By, not by itself, particularly, but as long as it has tomato or corn in it, I'm good to go.
Well, right, if you turn it into a stew.
If you, precisely. But I love fried okra. I don't find that I had it growing up. I know what it is, and I like it. I love it now. But I didn't have it growing up.
We did. My grandpa always had a huge garden.
Mm.
Always. Always, always, always. So, and we grew so much of the food that we ate. And beyond the garden, we also had chickens. We had turkeys. We had poultry. We had animals. We had rabbits. Things that got eaten. Mm. But always a garden. He always grew okra. So the thing about okra for me growing up was that it was, we always had it in the house. It was always in the garden. And it was always stewed, which the kids never ate. I never had fried okra until going to K&W.
Oh, yum.
And then it was like, wait, it could be this delicious? You could dip it in dressing?
I mean, my aunt used to make fried okra all the time. It was, that's how I came to love it. And then I thought, oh, maybe I could do this in other ways. And now it turns out I can only eat it one way, fried.
My mom didn't like the consistency, especially when it was boiled.
Mm-hmm.
Anything my mother did not like in one fashion never got made in another fashion. It was just X'd off.
It was done.
It turns out I was in college when a girlfriend of mine that lived a few doors down from me said, come for dinner. We often did dinner together. And she said, I'm going to make squash. And I'm like, I don't like squash. And she said, well, how do you
know? What?
Right?
She loves some squash.
So she said, well, how do you know you don't like my squash? I make really great squash. And I'm like, I don't like squash. And she said, well, I love squash and I'm making it and I'm making some other things. So if you don't like it, blah, blah, blah. So I had a bite and another bite and another bite. Uh-huh. Then I'm like taking her plate. I'm like, can I have that too? And she said, I thought you didn't like squash. And what I realized was my mother, if she didn't like something, it was completely banned from the house.
So your mama didn't like squash.
And so she told me I didn't like squash. Turns out I like squash. I like zucchini. I like practically everything out of the garden. Right. I'll eat. But
shocking.
If she didn't like it.
Zucchini. Shocking. Right.
Well.
I couldn't possibly.
Squash is so versatile. Like, we had a squash.
Yes, it has a neck on it. You can hold on to it.
You can hold on to it. You can cook it up with onions. You can make a squash casserole.
Yes.
Squash is yellow squash is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That yellow, yeah. So delicious. You know what's funny about that? Like, I think a lot of people think of the South as so meat-oriented.
Yes.
Yep.
But when I think about the meals we grew up on, what I really remember are the vegetables.
Exactly.
I remember the side dishes, honestly, more than I remember the meat.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's saying something for a gay man.
I agree, though. I feel like a lot of the dishes from the South are all about the garden.
Yes.
That come from the garden. And like you said, it's like most every family had a garden of some sort. Mm-hmm. Or a farm of some sort. Or
yeah, honey. And you know, when you grew 15 varieties of beans and peas,
yeah,
so
exactly.
you had something to do with them.
Yes, and
and stringing those green beans on the front porch on a Sunday afternoon, good Lord.
No, it was always sitting down in front of like the Friday night lineup of Falcon Crest, and Dallas, and
yes.
the shell and butter beans, or snap and snap peas.
Yes, and you know, so a funny thing is I love field peas, and they're so impossible to find in Los Angeles. And I absolutely unequivocally
because there's
love
no
them.
Fields in Los Angeles.
That is true. There are none.
Find a freeway bean.
That's it. That's it. So my mom did grow a fabulous garden, and there were no weeds in the garden.
And no squash either.
No squash in the garden either. But she did. She had a green thumb. She planted by the almanac. And so for those of you who are not familiar with the almanac, it's been around for years and years and years, but it plots the sun, the moon, the stars, water signs, dry signs. You can't plant potatoes on water signs or else they are going to rot. So everything has to be done by a particular sign. And
My mother's the same way.
And the gardens were fabulous.
To this day, like, she'll see, you know, photos of my plants and stuff, and then she'll start quoting the almanac. And I'm like, it doesn't apply to Southern California, lady.
Yes, it does. It applies to everywhere. No, the almanac is the Bible,
doesn't.
Dude.
No, it doesn't. It's the same weather year round. We get one month of rain, and that's it.
And you ain't had nary a potato come out of that yard.
Right? They all rotted right in the ground.
Well, you may have a point. I ain't seen no lemon or no lime in the past couple of years. So
I will say that one of the things that my mom did, she did fry a lot of meat. And
yes.
I will say that I totally agree with George and Rick that vegetables were the star of meals.
They were.
Because my mom fried so many things, and my parents hated it, but I would take bologna. The pork chop. Huh?
Bologna?
Well, we're not going there. I hate bologna. My BLO, I'm not going to even go there.
Do you hate it? Does your mama just hate it?
No, I hate it. I hate bologna with a passion.
All right.
But my mom would fry things like pork chops, mm-hmm. and she would fry it to death, and then it would be on the plate for supper, and I would take the pork chop, and I would pat it off with a paper towel. Needless to say, my mom and dad did not think that was funny at all.
Well, you were trying to be funny.
I wasn't trying to be funny. I just didn't want all the grease.
No.
However, I do like, we did save bacon grease and yes, ham grease.
Absolutely. In a can. My mother used to save bacon grease.
Used to.
Right?
Well, she probably still does, yeah.
Because you want to flavor the greens, the mm-hmm. vegetables. You want to give them a little something. I'm here to tell you, I love salt and pepper, but it just doesn't replace a little bacon grease.
Well, that's the thing about that. We might talk about how vegetables were the star of the show,
yes.
but every one of them vegetables had meat in it.
Yes.
Every one of them.
I don't even think I knew a vegetarian until I moved to California.
Exactly.
And a vegan? Don't even get me started. If you ain't got some butter and an egg, come on now.
I mean, collard greens and ham hock, that's vegetarian, right?
I mean, sure.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Where did
barbecue go? Did you grow up with barbecue? Because I did not.
Oh, hell yes, we grew up with barbecue.
Of course we grew up with barbecue.
I did not. Barbecue was not big.
I don't know you. You can't sit with us.
Again, back there in the woods, they're eating them damn turtles. I told y'all about this before.
That's not true. You know what we actually, I guess it was to a degree, it's probably what it was. Pig pickings was always the big thing for
us. How could you have a pig pick and you didn't have barbecue?
Well, they didn't make barbecue.
What'd they do with the pig?
No, so what he is saying, so everyone understands, is George and I grew up in a section that had barbecue. Almost every restaurant had barbecue of some sort. We ate pig, period. Where Rick grew up, they had a pig picking, but they brought in the pig for a special occasion. The pig reigned supreme in Eastern North Carolina.
And what I don't understand is you had a pig picking. What did they do with the pig if they didn't chop it up, turn it into barbecue?
They didn't make barbecue out of it, though. They just made meat. Like,
it's just a hunk of hog?
It's just a hunk of hog. You know,
She's wrong. She won't raise right. I'm here to, and her mom was alive. I'm gonna have to call her.
You need to call her
because there's something wrong with this. I mean, they had the opportunity. They have pigs, and
we just did not have a lot of barbecue. So.
No, y'all had a lot of chickens. Yeah. I do know that mm-hmm. there was where Rick grew up. There are millions of chickens raised there. I mean, chicken is really, really popular where he's from. Whereas in Eastern North Carolina, the pig does reign supreme.
But chicken is a close second.
Chicken mm-hmm. is a close second. And we do, that North Carolina grows some animals for eating.
But I think we'd be remiss to talk about Southern food if we didn't talk about biscuits. Now, come on.
All right. So you're right. Yes, biscuits. So my grandma, because obviously, I was raised by my grandparents. Which I feel like, you know, it's not like I was raised by my parents. So it was two generations back. And so my grandma cooked for me when I was growing up the same way she cooked for her own children, the same way she learned from her mother. So it was old school Southern cooking. And my grandma, every single day of her life, would either make biscuits or she would make cornbread. And I am talking about biscuits that would go into a 450 degree oven in the summer. In the South, mm-hmm. no air conditioning.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And humid.
Every day, sometimes twice a day.
Every day. Every single day. I remember there were points where my grandpa, I think she did it because of him. He, in his mind, if there wasn't bread on the table, it wasn't dinner.
Yeah.
And I remember once she made dinner, and I don't know why it was, but she didn't make bread. And he sat down at the table, he looked at it, he got up and walked away. And he didn't eat dinner then. Because there was no bread on the table.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All I know is I heard a lot of pop, pop, pop. on the corner of the kitchen counter.
That's my mama now, but back in the day, she made biscuits just like your grandma all the time. And this is just about, and cornbread. Cornbread was a big cornbread.
So my dad was raised by his grandmother, like George was, and she, the same thing. It was biscuits. Three meals a day. There was always biscuits in the house.
There has to be bread on the table.
And my mother's mother always made biscuits. My mother was not a biscuit maker. So my dad used to beg her, oh, please, Snooks, make some biscuits. Make some biscuits. So she said, all right, Irvin, I'm going to make biscuits. Oh. But if you complain, needless to say, it was probably the worst biscuit on earth. She did try.
Well, you can't just make one.
No. Well,
you have to know how.
Yeah, yes, it's yeah, something precisely. You finesse over time.
So let's just say it was pop, pop, pop. Because she said, no, Irvin, you said you would not complain and you wouldn't eat it and you complained. So you get a canned biscuit. Do the best you can.
Well, I love me, though, growing up, some biscuits and gravy. It was the one thing I look forward to every Saturday morning. My mom would make biscuits and gravy, and it was my favorite breakfast item.
Mama made cereal.
You know what's funny?
It's bread related, right?
You know what's funny about that is we weren't a big breakfast house either. Breakfast was very utilitarian in our house.
Okay.
She always made pan toast. You know what that is? Where you instead of making toast in the toaster, you take a piece of bread, you slather it with butter, and you fry it in the frying pan.
I had pan toast for breakfast this morning, and I'm not joking.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Girl,
pan toast.
You ain't lived till you've had pan toast.
You ain't lived till you. Mm-mm, that's wonderful.
All right. Because it doesn't. Try it in the morning.
It doesn't get hard like toast does. And no. I love toast. I do. But pan frying a piece of bread, it comes out very, very soft and moist with
so
that
delicious.
Butter. It is so good.
That's what breakfast was for us.
Yes.
Most every morning. It was toast and it was coffee, even when we were kids. And then you get on the school bus and you go to school.
Hello, coffee? As kids, all you people who think that Starbucks is something new, trust me. I had coffee by the time I was 7.
And if it ain't had a percolator, it ain't right.
It ain't right, honey. It ain't right. I still got a percolator.
He does. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, and I don't know about y'all, but Friday nights was fried fish.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that y'all did in your families?
No, not really. Friday nights was the grocery store trip. So I feel like the weekend was spent doing like a steak or hamburger or something special.
Friday was payday too, I assume.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So Friday nights we went to the grocery store and then we came home and watched Dallas.
All right.
We did.
Fried fish.
Fried fish or fish stew. Yeah. My dad made an excellent fish stew. Fish was a Friday thing, and I was actually talking to a girlfriend of mine about this yesterday, that so in Catholic families, fish is a really big thing, but it also is for British families. So my girlfriend, her mother is Scottish, and she grew up having fish every Friday. And I find that it's something that I enjoyed because it was something different. Fish wasn't something we always had.
Yeah.
So that Friday tradition was always a fun
thing. For us, it was always something that was on a Friday. It was,
yes.
And it was always fried. It was always fried. Most often it was probably catfish.
We didn't have no catfish. Yeah. Mama didn't like that. She said it was a bottom.
And therefore, you don't like it.
Of course not. Mom said I didn't eat that, so
right.
I don't eat it.
So it was always like fried fish, coleslaw, and cornbread. Mm-hmm. And that was the meal. That was the set meal for Friday nights.
Can we please dispel one myth, though?
Yes.
About roadkill? Please tell me nobody in your family eats roadkill. Because nobody in my family does. No one's saying a word. They're just staring at me.
Because I'm so shocked you would ask this question. I just explained to you how we had this giant garden, all these animals in the backyard. We're not eating things that are dead on the road.
Thank you. That is my whole freaking point. Is there's this misconception from anybody else in the world that we eat roadkill. Who the fuck does that?
But did y'all eat venison growing up?
No, I couldn't do it. I could not eat Bambi.
Our family didn't. I have had venison, but I did not like that. Mom and Daddy refused to eat it. But I didn't find the taste to be interesting.
We weren't a hunting family.
Gamey.
Not
but,
boring.
You know, you always have those friends that I was like, oh, I went out in the Indian. Here's a mess of venison for y'all.
Right.
And, you know,
that's
and then
right.
You, oh, thank you. And then it's like, did you try to serve it to the kids? And like, this ain't fried chicken.
And it's certainly not steak.
It is certainly not steak.
Chewy.
Well, and, you know, so just so we're clear, there is one state in the South that's technically the South. It doesn't look like the South on the map, but it is. They do have a law on the books that says if roadkill is less than 2 hours old, it is legal to eat it.
Ugh.
So there are antiquated laws on the books.
But no one in my family has ever eaten roadkill.
No.
So to dispel that myth and that little rumor, we don't do it.
So, you know, you've gotten very excited about this myth and rumor that George and I didn't seem to grow up with, but I guess in Western North Carolina.
No, I heard it a lot in California.
Did you really?
Yeah, really did.
When you told them where you were from?
Mm-hmm. Well, they also think we sleep with our cousins.
Well, you didn't?
When I could get them off the pig farm.
On the pack house, honey. Did y'all, growing up, were there ever foreign foods that came into your dining vocabulary?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
I mean, I think if you could count spaghetti as Italian food, maybe. Yeah, that's about
well, that
it.
Came in a can, so that was okay.
No, Mom used to make it, actually.
So did my grandma. Yeah. Trust you me, it was not mozzarella. It was extra sharp cheddar cheese, grated and put on top.
We did have spaghetti out of the can. And then when I was in high school, I worked at Winn-Dixie. And I taught myself to make a magnificent spaghetti with you know, spaghetti sauce out of the jar, so it wasn't from scratch.
So what you're saying is you touch stuff to boiled water, make some noodles, and open a jar. Spaghetti sauce.
And mix it all together. Yeah.
It did not come out of a can, it came out of a jar. At least part of it did. Part of it came out of a box.
Upgrades.
That's true. So was there someone that when they came, there was something special done for, or were there special gatherings and stuff? I grew up as an only child, so it was typically just the three of us.
Yeah. Well, the family reunions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we had one, and I was thinking about this last night in preparation for this, about the fact that the family reunion I remember growing up with as a child was always my paternal grandmother's family.
Okay.
So it wasn't the Skinners, it was the Whiteheads.
Okay.
So it was that family.
All right.
And it was every September, I think it was like maybe the second weekend of every September, so when they'd have it, it was a set thing. And that was the only time that I ever saw my grandma really make a lot of salads, and I'm saying air quotes with salads, because these are the salads of the South. And they include Watergate, ambrosia, carrot, and
pimento cheese.
Not pimento cheese. Like, you know,
gotta be a potato salad.
Obviously, the potato salad. Yes. Two kinds: the white kind and the yellow kind.
That's right.
And you know the Waldorf salad. So everything was. So
stuff that could be made in bulk.
Everything could be made in bulk that had nothing to do with what we think of as a salad today. It was not green.
Right,
well,
right.
I mean, that's not true.
Right. Well, one of them was.
It might have had a celery or something in it.
It had more like Cool Whip in it.
Yes.
And pudding.
Yes. But there were things that could be made and stored in the refrigerator that didn't have to be reheated, which is always an important thing about family reunions and gatherings, because whomever's hosting it, they may have warm stuff on the stove that they bring out. But the majority of people are traveling in. So you need something.
Stuff you can take away.
Precisely. Yeah. Something that will last a little while as well. Because no one wants to eat some kind of something that's been in the sun all day long with mayonnaise in it.
That's true. That's very
true. And it's an important distinction to know. Things with mayonnaise can't sit out in the sun or else they turn.
Speaking of mayonnaise, the only mayonnaise in the South, is Duke's.
That's it. They ain't no other kind.
There's no other kind.
And we do have to suffer. This is for you people who are loving and kind and want to be generous. We desperately
need
some
Duke's, please.
We'll take it by the jar, the case. We do not discriminate.
So honey, you bring can just pour it into a box and send it.
Anything, huh? Anything. Bring us some Duke's.
Because we cannot get it here
except for the big box place that delivers everything, and then it's very expensive. Please send some. We love you.
And Duke's, if you're listening.
We do not mind sponsorship. That's it. One nice thing that my godmother would call my mother some days, and she'd say, Snoops, I'm going to be there in about 30 minutes. Can you make me an egg sandwich? Well, it doesn't get much more simple than an egg sandwich. It's a fried egg, and two pieces of white toast.
Your mama loved requests.
She did. Well, just
so
the
much.
Opposite. So, well, all of you probably know by now, my mother didn't feed people. I did not grow up with that mother that fed all the neighbors. Matter of fact, we could go hours without eating to make sure she didn't feed someone. But my godmother, she would feed anytime she called and said, make me an egg sandwich. And that's all my Evelyn wanted was an egg sandwich. I delighted in that.
That is so sweet. Yeah, your mama was the kind that company would come over around supper time and she won't go feed them.
Mm-mm. She would outsit them. And I remember one time, and that is a term, outsit. There was one time I said to my mother, I'm hungry. And she took me into the kitchen and she said, when they leave, I will feed you. As long as they stay, you will not eat. Get accustomed to it. And she was very serious.
What about your birthdays, though? Did you guys have homemade birthday cakes or did you have store-bought birthday cakes?
Oh, it was always homemade, except for...
Same. Same with these.
I think maybe, like, special birthdays. Like, I don't know, like, when you turn, like, whatever age you turn when you have a special birthday and people get invited. I don't even know. But it was always, like, you know, and for me, it was always coconut cake. That was the one my grandma made.
Coconut is my favorite cake on earth.
Yes.
It really is.
Me too. My mother's best friend, who I call Aunt Fern, used to make, and I've talked about this many, many times before, a pineapple upside down cake was the thing that she would always make. And that was always every year for my birthday. That's what she made me. And it's just, I miss the pineapple upside down cake.
I always got a cake as well that my mom made. If Daddy wasn't traveling, it was a chocolate cake because chocolate was his favorite. She killed two birds with one stone. If he was traveling, I would often get a coconut cake or German chocolate cake, which has coconut.
Yes, honey.
I German love chocolate. German chocolate
Me
cake.
Me too.
Not a fan of German chocolate.
What's funny is that
baby shit.
No. Wrong. You were so
you
wrong
still
for that.
Need Jesus. Mm-hmm. Oh, my Lord.
It's like baby shit.
I don't remember a lot of desserts, like, from my grandma. Like, meals completely, like, you know, collard greens, turnip greens, mustard greens, boiled ham, ashed potatoes, all that, like, mm-hmm. growing up on all that. But desserts, I remember coconut cake, I remember banana pudding.
Mm-hmm. Peach cobbler.
Lemon meringue pie.
That was my other grandma. All right. And cobbler is my stepmother, who's it's her cobbler recipe that I use to this day.
Oh, wow.
My grandma
should make that one day.
We should. My grandma made a lot of candy at Christmas.
Okay.
Like Divinity. That was one of the things the thing I know about Divinity is this. You can't make it when it's humid.
Nope.
That's the one thing I know.
No, my mother's Christmas go-to candy was fudge. Every year she'd make fudge. Or sometimes she'd make like a trail mix in the oven, like mm-hmm. from scratch. Mm-hmm. That was some good stuff too.
So, yep.
Lots of Worcestershire sauce, though, I remember.
I love Worcestershire sauce.
I love Worcestershire sauce. It's not a Bloody Mary unless there's so much Worcestershire sauce in it you can't taste anything else.
And it's not spaghetti sauce unless it's Worcestershire sauce.
So do you guys cook a lot now?
I don't say a lot, but when I do cook, it is more often than not something that I grew up with.
Same here. I love to cook. Since I'm single, I don't cook as much.
Yeah.
Only because I'm not a fan of leftovers. No matter how good it was the first time. I can do leftovers, but it is not my favorite.
Yeah, but you also are known to just go out one weekend and get a ham and throw it in the oven and make a full-on meal for, like, no reason whatsoever. And I'm so not used to that.
Or a whole turkey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then repurpose it for different things, you know, and freeze it. Yeah, I do like to cook a lot. And I would say that I do go-tos. For a long time, my go-to was homemade lasagna. I don't make as much anymore, but I do like to cook, and I like to experiment. I buy lots of cookbooks, and I look, and sometimes I'm like, I would not cook it that way. Oh, no.
Let me fix this.
Right. Or, as I was saying about one Southern author and chef, Sean Brock, I love his pimento cheese, and that is my go-to pimento cheese recipe.
I thought my recipe was your go-to pimento cheese.
I thought my recipe was your go-to pimento cheese.
Oops. Yes, they are. I don't know who Sean is. What was his name again?
What were you saying? Concussion. She drinks.
Right. Well, I just started cooking a couple of years ago, as you know, Danny. I didn't used to cook at all. And what, 2 or 3 years ago, I really kind of started cooking and trying to go back and get my mom's old recipes and try older dishes that I grew up with and things like that. And it's actually been a lot more fun than I ever remember it being because it was always a chore to me. It was like, oh my God, can we just go to a restaurant and sit down?
Well, there's something lovely about going to a restaurant. There's the anticipation of trying food that you've never had before. There's the social aspect of it. But then when you cook at home or when you cook for people, that is a whole other experience.
It is. And learning to use different spices and different things to get you out of your comfort zone. I love going to restaurants and then seeing, oh my, they did it this way. And then trying to see if it's something I would like to replicate at home or just never make again at home and go back to that restaurant and have it again there.
Do y'all have recipes like from your mom or from your grandparents that you use today, like actual recipes written down?
No, I wish I did. I don't.
My mom passed away in 2017 and I brought a bunch of things back, and I have recently been going through a couple of notebooks that she had some recipes, and I will tell you there are some of them that are so amazing and there are some that are so ridiculous. And when I say ridiculous, I will find a recipe and post it. But I was like, oh, no, okay, really? No, this is nothing but sugar and a 7-Up in a cake. I'm like, no, this is just
ridiculous. Cake.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
Well, honey, it won't punch if it won't 7-Up in a block of sherbet.
Oh, well, now that's different. Mama didn't make sherbet, but that I like, you know.
Well, every now and then I will call my mom, though, and ask for a recipe or ask her to talk me through something. I'll never forget my first Christmas dinner that I made. I called my mom, and I'm on the phone with her the entire time I'm making that fucking turkey. And she talked me through it, and it came out so perfect.
That's nice.
Literally lifted it out of the pan onto the plate, and the entire skeleton stayed in the pan, and the meat went right to the plate, and I didn't have to carve a thing. It was
that does
perfect.
Not sound natural.
Yeah, I'm believing he was
it
drinking.
Worked. It worked yes. perfectly. I didn't have to carve a thing, and it just it was such
just
a it
just, right up
as my grandma would say, just hunk it up.
That's it. Well, and then the we all know that Rick has an aversion to meat on a bone.
I can't stand anything on a bone.
But you know, the greatest thing on earth is they make just a turkey breast that you can make in the oven that doesn't have bones.
It's not the same thing, though. It's all about nostalgia.
Well, and truthfully, and this, and I mean this so sincerely, you had your mom to talk to and to walk through with. That's amazing.
That is really sweet. And I feel like I'm incredibly fortunate that when I moved out of the house and went to school, my grandma would write me. Like, she'd write a letter every week. And every week, she would include a recipe. Something that I had grown up with.
Oh, I love that.
So I am so blessed and lucky that I have this collection of recipes in her handwriting.
Oh, can we share those? We should share those on social.
We could share some of those.
Let's post that. Give her a little shout out.
So amazing.
Should we wrap up?
We should.
Okay.
I want to tell a little story. I think, you know, we see so often, and we've talked about this often, is like how the South is portrayed in film or in television. And for me personally, there has never been a truer moment, a more relatable moment than in an episode of season one of True Blood. I don't know if y'all watched that.
Uh-huh. A little.
So Sookie's grandma dies and they're having the funeral and, you know, all the people are coming to the house and they're all bringing food. And one of the people is putting something in the refrigerator and they pull out a pie that Sookie freaks out and is like, no, you can't touch that pie. It's the last thing that her grandma actually cooked.
Okay.
And at the very end of the episode, she sits down completely alone with that pie and she eats the whole thing and she just cries through the whole episode because she knows it's the last thing she's ever going to eat that her grandma
made.
Oh
my gosh.
I remember that.
And it makes me bawl. Just thinking about it makes me choke up because it's such a true, real moment that is so relatable, I think, not just to Southerners. I'm sure anyone who's ever had somebody who's passed on, but so... The fact that it is the South, that it's that Southern, it's of course it's pecan pie,
right?
You know, and it's so, it hits me where I live.
Yes, right. And, you know, one of the things that the four of us have talked about in developing the podcast, and we do go over things, but we all agree on the fact that food and Southerners and kitchens, I mean, it's all one.
It is.
Yeah, it's a through line. It's a.
It is, it's sort of our lifeline to home or umbilical cord, what have you. You know, I do realize that somebody in Pennsylvania probably has a similar experience, but I know every Southerner I know, there's a food connection and there's a connection with the kitchen. All the most famous parties take place in the kitchen, never in the living room. And it's always about food. And it is so wonderful to offer up food, at least for me, to cook for other people and to enjoy it because I like food and I like to share. And food is the one thing we can all come together over and not fight, mostly.
Because that's the thing about Southern cooking. More than anything, I think cooking for people comes from the heart.
Yes.
Like Rick said.
The main ingredient in any Southern dish comes down to nothing more than love.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely, honey. Wish was your sauce or not.
Now, that said, I'll just talk about food. I'm a little thirsty.
It's making me parched.
Should we mosey on out to the front porch, maybe?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's get the mosey on.
All right. See you in a minute. Well, welcome out to the front porch, y'all.
Well, thank you.
I'm very excited about today's cocktail.
What is it?
It's a variation of my favorite cocktail, a Moscow Mule, but this is stubborn as a mule.
Well, that sounds much less communist.
It's pretty in pink as well.
It's pink.
So basically, it's a Moscow Mule, but with a little bit of pomegranate.
Oh, as my grandpa used to call them, Chinese apples.
Well, all right now. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
That is delicious.
So, Jacob, what did you pull out of the hat for us today?
Out of the hat today, we have Southern accents.
Oh. I have one of those.
Oh, yes, you do.
I ain't got no accent.
Me neither.
Not nair none.
Not name one, honey. No.
So, I don't know about y'all, but I'm sure growing up, I had an accent. I mean, I think moving across the country, you certainly lose a lot of that. But I don't think I ever had a very thick accent. But I remember people, strangers would say to me as a child, because apparently I talked to strangers a lot as a child. They would say,
we've heard those stories.
I still talk to strangers.
Well, you know, they're only strangers till you meet them.
That's it.
They would say to me, where are you from? And I would say, well, I'm from right here, little old Wilson. And they say, well, you sound like you're from New York.
New York. Mm. You know why?
I do know why now. Now that I've grown
queer.
It's that queer accent.
Oh, I see. Well, you know,
I got the
Yankees.
Same thing. They're like, are you from New York? And I'm like, no, I'm just gay, honey.
I'm just a little fag. Mm.
I didn't get any of that. They knew exactly where I was from.
They still know where you're from.
They do. And as a sort of a setup or proviso or whatever, the reason I know George and Jacob is partially because of my accent. George and I flew on an airplane together. So we both knew we were going to North Carolina because that was our destination.
Which was the birthplace of flight.
That's right.
And Kenny Hall, got it. Miss Kenny Hall.
Right. And Pepsi Cola. Let's don't forget that as well. But I met Rick because he recognized my accent.
I heard it. I mean, it's a little pronounced and it just sort of rises up above everything else. And I turn it, we were on the back patio of some bar and I hear this Southern accent and I'm like, who is that? And turn around, and we've been fast friends ever since.
Yes, we have. One of my roommates when I lived in Miami, the reason we ended up becoming roommates was because he recognized my accent and came up to me in a bar and said, are you from North Carolina? And indeed, I am. So mine has moved a little bit. I grew up in Eastern North Carolina where the language sounds, it's right bright outside in the sunshine now, ain't it? Can I have some ice from my iced tea? It's hot out here. Everything is so elongated. It's just killing me.
You're making me homesick.
And I took 2 years of speech classes, and this is what I wound up with. Cool. And then, of course, the boys make fun of me because I go to the bathroom, and I'd rather have this and that.
So I used to, my Southern accent used to be very pronounced, if you will. And I worked very hard to change that. And I will tell you the reason why is because I found, especially when I got to the West Coast, they deduct 100 points from your IQ anytime they hear the Southern accent. That was my experience when I first got here. And I worked very hard to sort of change it and get rid of it. And, don't know that I gained that 100 points back, but the opinion was formed, honey. Yeah, exactly.
I did have someone ask me, I was probably about 26 years old, and I was on the phone with someone, and I was explaining whatever it was I needed, and she said, oh, I just can't understand your accent, except I can't do a New York accent, obviously, and she's like, I can't understand your accent, and I remember saying, I'm sorry, and I repeated what I said, and it hit me full bare that I will never say that again. So what I say now is, it's your fault you can't understand.
It's English.
What word didn't you get? Because I'm not ashamed of my Southern accent.
I have used that Southern accent to get a lot of things in my life.
Well, and I will say, for me, in the beginning, in the early years, I wanted to get rid of it. I worked very hard to get rid of it. But now, as I've gotten somewhat older in life, I actually am starting to embrace it a little more. I use it more in the show. I use it more in life. I don't
definitely have a strong Southern accent, except when I get a little liquored up. Or I'm on the phone with my family.
Ooh.
And then it comes out so strong.
Anytime I'm on the phone, or God forbid I should go home for a week, I come back.
Right.
It takes a week for me to acclimate back into the other accent.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is when we watch a TV show or a movie and it's set in a particular area.
Here we go. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Preach, girl.
Right. And it's set in Savannah, and all of a sudden they sound like they're from Lake Charles, Louisiana, or Chicago, or Texas.
Kentucky.
Or that accent that just comes in, that comes and goes.
Comes and goes. Is the worst.
That is the worst.
Oh, God.
I'd rather you just have no accent than fake it half the time because you can't figure out what accent you were using.
Yes. Yes. It's true, because we're not going to say close the door.
We're gonna shut the door.
Or crack the window. You don't want somebody to hit the window with a bottle and crack it. You just want to put some space between the window and the sill.
You want to cut the lights on.
That's right.
Or cut them off. Cut them lights off. I'm going to cut them lights off. I'm going to pet that dog.
Aggressively Southern.
Right. And there's a big difference also in moneyed Southern accents and poor Southern accents. So you get a moneyed accent where they talk very genteel-like, and they just are so interesting to listen to. Their voice never goes up very high or goes very low. It's right there in the middle. Oftentimes, they're fun to listen to, and there are actually people who speak like that every day of the week. They never get excited. That doesn't happen to me. I drink gin. It gets deeper in the morning.
Shakespearean.
Shakespearean.
Yeah, right. So they hate it when I use my little Shakespearean accent, but I like it.
We don't hate it. It's just very unique to you.
And it's very affected, and it's very on purpose. So.
But you know what's funny is I feel like there's that whole tidewater region of the South where I feel like that's a very legitimate accent that they would use, because it seems that they're very, very proud of their direct descendants from England, from Wales.
So they say, there's a mouse in the house, get him out.
Exactly. So I feel like that's where your Shakespearean truly comes from. Like, you're channeling your Tidewater.
Well, I'm channeling my
Lady
ancestors.
Tidewater over here.
Exactly. And people back home are very proud of their ancestries.
Yes, they are. So, and a unique thing about that is, not only from northeastern North Carolina and southeastern Virginia, but also the state of Maine, there's a large Welsh influence, and so they have a mouse in the house and they want you to get him out. And that is something that is very similar. If you know someone who was born and raised in New Orleans, someone who was born and raised in Brooklyn, they sound almost identical.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because there's an enormous Italian heritage in their families. And so people assume that if you're from New Orleans, you don't sound like anybody else in the country. But you do. You sound like people who are from Brooklyn.
If you're from that area of the city.
Originally.
Yes.
Precisely. And it does mean inside of New Orleans. It doesn't mean in LeCount.
No, exactly. And I know when I moved there, and I met people that were originally like lived their entire lives there in the city. And I always thought, you don't sound Southern at all.
Not at all.
You sound like you're from Brooklyn.
Yes.
And it was because of that. But it was a very wide-eyed opener for me that it was like, oh, well, you don't sound Southern.
Which is so fun to me because I do love people's accents. And I love an accent from New York or from Boston. I love the harshness.
Oh, I love the New York accent.
Or what I call the harshness of it. I like, it's right there in your face. And I like that.
A little more clipped.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we come from the land of like you said, everything's elongated. Everything's drawn out.
Yes. New York is short. It's quick. It's
that's it. Yeah. That's it.
It's because we're sitting on the front porch with a fan. They got places to go.
I mean, the word shit is like shit. Exactly. It takes forever to get it out.
Well, she.
Thank you, Leslie.
Leslie Jordan. To quote a queen.
From the South, honey, from Chattanooga.
Well, she.
So, are there any really, really good, memorable Southern accents from, like, television and movies for y'all? Because for me, like, the one that comes up the most that's so prominent in my mind is clearly Rue McClanahan from Golden Girls, which was a complete made-up Southern accent.
Absolutely, yeah. But she did it in such a way that just sort of flowed.
She owned it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. She owned it 1,000%, and it felt natural to her.
You buy into it. And even as a Southerner, I completely bought into it.
Totally. And one actress that I just enjoy her playing a Southern character because she is Southern is Joanne Woodward. She can bring to a role all of the South in her acting because she is Southern.
Yeah.
And if you see her in a role that she's not playing a Southerner, she hardly has any accent at all. But for me, Joanne Woodward has probably the prettiest quintessential Southern accent in the movies.
Well, for me, I think it's probably Leslie Jordan. There's something about his accent that is just, he talking about owning it, that is 100% him. He doesn't try to change it. He's not trying to embellish. Much like you, you've owned, Danny, you've owned your accent. And it's, even though you do try to put the Shakespearean on from time to time, you sort of
she's owning that too. Right?
but Leslie's accent is one, it feels like it's 100% him. What you see is what you get. And for me, it comes through loud and clear.
And it's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful.
Oh, I thank you on behalf of Leslie and myself.
We love you both. We love you both. Your family pronounced names. Well, maybe it wasn't just your family, but
the village I grew up in
yes. where people's names yes. were spelled one way and pronounced
another way.
So ridiculously different.
It is. I mean, to have a cousin named Agatha.
Which is Agatha.
Right. And then Miss Nina lived down the street.
Nina.
Right.
And there was translating.
And there was Otis.
Otis.
Yeah. It just never ended. And they were all so sold on the fact that this was the exact pronunciation. Having said that, I have had to sort of, I've made a lot of fun of it, but I have had to sort of ease off a little bit because we do have very unique names in this world now. People name their children something that didn't exist.
Of course.
So if Miss Nina wanted to be Miss Nina, I mean, alrighty then. And Agatha probably didn't know it was Agatha.
Agatha.
That's going to be my drag name. Agatha.
Agatha Nina Otis. Right. Otis.
Agatha is open.
Usually.
I'm Agatha and I'm a Nina. I'm Agatha in search of a Nina.
It's just something else, children. Something else. Well, as my Aunt Lucy used to say, oh, I guess it was originally George's.
I mean,
we're family now, so we are adopting. That's right. We're adopting relatives. So as our Aunt Lucy would say, my ice cubes are dry, y'all. I think it's time we go on in and get us a refresher.
Amen. Amen.
See, and some cornbread while we at it.
That's right.
Good girl.
I like cornbread.
All right, y'all.
See you.
Bye. Bye. See you soon.
See you soon.
Queer Magnolias is a weekly podcast hosted by Rick Clifton, Danny White, and George Skinner, and produced by yours truly, Jagan McGinnis. You can find us everywhere you find your podcasts, so please take a few minutes to leave a rating or review. We definitely look forward to hearing from you. If this is your first time joining us, please subscribe to receive the next episode automatically. Thank you for following us on Twitter at Queer Magnolias and on Instagram at Queer Magnolias Podcast, or email us at queermagnoliaspodcast@gmail.com.